It's having a football philosophy, not necessarily a system. So you don't get fixated on the system because you can play football out of any system. It's the principles of how you play. So if you play in 4-2-3-1, 4-3-3, 3-4-3, 3-5-2, 3-1-4-3, it doesn't matter. You'll know what your brand of football can look like.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Talent Takes Practice, a podcast looking at what it takes to make it to the top of your chosen field and how we use this experience to help young people maximize their own talents, whatever those talents might be. Today, I'm really excited about this. We're talking to somebody currently at the top of his chosen profession. He's managed at Watford, Reading, Swansea, Liverpool and Celtic. Probably guess who I'm talking about now. He's now the manager of one of Roberto's former clubs, Leicester City. And Robbie, great to see you, mate. I know, you know, coaching young people is something that you have taken to your heart. It's a huge vocation for you. You're very passionate about it. What are your thoughts about Brendan Rodgers? Do you know him well?
Yeah, I've met him on several occasions. You know, an in-depth, charismatic coach. People I speak to who've played under him says he's one of the best coaches out there. You know, he gets the best out of players. Look what he's done to that Leicester City side. Look what he's done at Celtic. You know, look what he's done everywhere he's been. You know, making young players better, making them believe in themselves, having an identity, his sides. We know they love to play football. So for me, it's fascinating, Matthew, with obviously my role at Macclesfield FC and how important it is for me as head of football to try and, you know, gain the knowledge of somebody like Brendan. You know, how do I recruit? What am I looking for in a player? Do you have, do you look for the players before you look at which system you're going to play, or is it vice versa? So there's so many things I want to talk to Brendan about.
And you know, funnily enough, Robbie, you talked about how you're looking to learn from great coaches in your new role at Macclesfield. I'm going to ask Brendan about this, but he learned a lot from my first table tennis coach, Peter Charter. So I think he is a really, for what it's worth, he's a great coach, but I think the best coaches are also brilliant learners.
I'm sure Brendan Rodgers had great mentors himself, and he's probably implemented, if he's taken a little bit from everybody he's worked with, like I'm going to try and do in my new role at Macclesfield FC in terms of Mark Hughes, Martin O'Neill, Steve Bruce, the great Eric Harrison, you know, possibly one of the best youth team coaches ever, the class of 92. You know, his work ethic, the way he demanded us first and foremost to work hard. You know, never mind, you know, in pre-season, the balls come out so quickly now. And that's where I think it's probably changed. We'll go into that with Brendan. But our philosophy was, first and foremost, desire, commitment and hard work. So I'm sure Brendan's implemented lots of that from the people he's worked with. And for me, Matthew, the Macclesfield project, Macclesfield FC. I know Macclesfield have lost the name Town in the Macclesfield Town, but you know the town certainly lost Macclesfield. It's an amazing adventure. What's an opportunity, Matthew, for young players? So as you know people have a go at me about my under 15 side, but it's going to be a balancing act, and I'm going to say this to Brendan. My under-15s, I believe, are one of the best grassroots teams in the country. Reason being, they've got a point to prove. They've been told at a young age they weren't good enough for academies. So they've come together, we've rehabilitated them, and now they've got an opportunity to play at Moss Rolls in 2 years' time in Macclesfield FC's first team. You know, so what a pathway that is for these youngsters. They can be playing in front of 2,000 fans in 2 years' time, have an education with the BTEC programme, and get paid for playing football at 16, 17. So, you know, is it best for them to go into a Cat 3 academy? But our facilities at Moss Rose and Macclesfield will be as good, if not better, than some Cat 3s. So what is the right pathway?
And, you know, it's such an exciting new venture for you. But the other thing I'm looking forward to with Brendan is, you know, a lot of parents tune into this podcast, a lot of aspiring youngsters. You know, how does he motivate young people? Because I know from some of the quotes from Gerrard and Carragher, he's a man with a lot of empathy. He knows how to unlock the passion. He treats players as individuals. And I'm really looking forward to finding out how he does that, what he's learned and what parents can take from him, you know, not just with regards to football, but, you know, whatever their passion might be, Rob.
What do you write in your book, Matthew, about the youngsters? Because you've not really touched on your books, the ones you've written, you know, How to Be Awesome. What is your, you know, philosophy with youngsters? How do they get the best out of themselves?
Well, funnily enough, thanks for mentioning that, Rob.
In the
new ones.
You were boring the nation for 5 minutes there beforehand.
So the new one is called Dare to Be You. And I think one thing, I'll tell you this, Rob, this is interesting. I did an event today and somebody started asking me about my own background. And, you know this, but my dad, Abbas, you know, he was born as a Shia Muslim. Okay, he grew up as in Islam, in the Indian Raj before partition. Then he moved to Pakistan after partition, came to the UK to study law in his 20s in the 1960s. And it's weird, Rob, it's really unusual for people to convert from Islam to Christianity. But my dad had this vision, he says, in his bedsit, his student bedsit, of Jesus converted, not to Christianity, evangelical Christianity, you know, like happy, clappy, all that kind of stuff. Then he went to church and met my mum, 16, you know, from Wrexham, like your mum,
yeah,
Val.
Yeah.
She was living in London at the time.
That's the first word I've got, to be fair, Wrexham.
So I've grown up with these really interesting influences on my life, you know, father and cultural influences. And at school, I was often quite embarrassed because I was the only kid in my class in suburban Reading with brown skin. I wasn't, you know, non-white. And I always used to go to bed dreaming of waking up white. But as I got older, I realised...
Really? Did you really?
I did,
honestly?
Rob, honestly, I've got to tell you, mate, because racism was so prevalent in the 70s
You dreamed to wake up white?
I would go to bed...
Wow.
Wishing that I'd wake up white. First girl I asked out at school, her response was, pick on someone your own colour. And that's tough, right? Her name was Yvonne. If you're listening, Yvonne, it still hurts. It still hurts.
So I'd have thought she'd have probably gone on your looks.
Yeah, that was the other thing she said. That was the second part of the response. But, you know, Rob...
Really, Matthew?
No,
is that
really,
right?
Really.
Wow, that's incredible.
No, absolutely. But as I've gotten older, Rob, I've realised that actually being a bit different, it gives you different ideas, it gives you a different perspective on things, and actually that can be a massive strength. So in Dare to Be You, it's saying to people, don't feel you have to conform, don't feel you have to go along with the crowd, don't feel as if you have to be the same as everyone else. Actually, in the future, I think the most creative people are the ones who find their own voice. And that's part of...
Amazing. That's quite incredible, Matthew. I can't... You know, that's the first time I've heard you say that. I know on our other podcast we've done with Freddie, you talked about, you know, racism, but you've never actually, you know, told that story before about actually wanting to wake up white. That is quite incredible.
By the way, just on Fred, I've got to ask you, did you see the documentary? And if you haven't...
Fantastic, and believe me, fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, the courage that it took to be the front and to tell his personal story about a problem I didn't know much about. I just thought that was brave, and I WhatsApped him to say so. And I hope you're well, Fred, if you're listening to this. So delighted now. Brendan Rodgers has joined us. It looks to me like you're in your office there, Brendan. You've got a lovely, like a mastermind, black chair. I don't know if any listeners remember Magnus Magnusson, but thank you so much for joining us. And before we actually started this, we had a bit of a chat, and I think this is going to be a fascinating insight into, don't want to flatter you too much here, Brenner, but just one of the top coaches in the country, really inspirational thinker about football, about youth development. Before I bring you in, Brendan, Robbie, how much do you know about Brendan? Have you worked together?
Well, I've met Brendan on several occasions, and I was lucky enough to go and see Brendan when he was Liverpool manager, you know, and that season they come so close to win the league. He was accommodating, you know, for me as a young coach, well, not young, I think I'm 46, you know, soon. But to listen to Brendan speak about football's philosophy, and everybody you speak to about Brendan says what a fantastic coach he is. And as Brendan will know, I work with Chris Sutton, and you know, I always say to Chris Sutton, you know, Celtic reserves are not bigger than Leicester. Certainly not, Brendan.
So, Brendan, but let me just take you back, if I can, at the outset here. You're a player, but you had to retire at 20 years of age because of injury. You know, how hard was that for you mentally, and what was it like breaking the news to your family and friends?
Matthew, it probably wasn't as traumatic as for most, because I think by that stage, when I'd been sort of injured for a year or so, I got my head around that, one, I probably wasn't going to be able to play to the level that I'd wanted to, and two, it was the case of, right, okay, well, what's going to happen next? And it was either a choice. I either went back home to Northern Ireland, and my love was always for the, you know, the football, and I felt that England was the place for me to be, so obviously I wanted to stay. And two, it was just, okay, right, it's not going to work out as a player, sadly, and there was probably the big part of me, I was never going to reach the level that I wanted to, but could I do that as a coach? And I've always been one where it's about the next experience, and even from a young age, it was, right, okay, so how can I be the best coach I can be? And that was the beginnings of it, really.
Why do you think, Brendan, you couldn't have reached the level that you wanted to? Because your work ethic, you're still in the office now, you know, and that's why you're so successful. You know, you're probably first in, last to leave, as probably most managers are. But why do you think you couldn't have reached the level you wanted to as a player?
I felt probably I was technically very, very good, Robbie.
Not like me then.
Well, I've had your legs, really, I'd have been all right. I was technically very good. I felt I had the brain at the top level. You know, as a young player, I'd been to Manchester United as a kid and went there and been around various clubs. But physically, and I felt that I would have been a late developer, because when I came over to England at 16, I was still very slight, very young. But if I'm realistic on it, I wasn't physically going to be probably quick enough to play at the highest level. And that was my whole reason for leaving home at 16, was to be the very best. And probably I recognised that I wasn't going to be able to be that person.
See, that's so interesting, Brendan Matthew, because, you know, my son's involved at Manchester United now, Brendan, and I listen to all the coaches. You know, and they say he's going to be a late developer. You know, maybe he can see that pass. He can see it. He's got that thought in his head. I can see the pass. But because of his physicality, he might not reach. And I'm sure you've seen players throughout your career who you've got to wait for. Mm. Do you understand what I mean? And that those players, the late developers, are sometimes the better ones.
100%. And I always say now, in my experiences, and probably, to be fair, if my father... if he really knew about football as well, he could have probably prepared me. For me, it was about being the very best. And for me, there was nothing less than that. When actually, I probably could have had a good career in the game if it wasn't for the injury and stuff. But my measure was at the very highest level, you know. So that's what I was trying to measure myself on. And I felt I was never going to be able to do that. But with the experiences now I have in coaching and management, I would say, like you say about your son, I always think it's the silver medalists that come through. The gold medalists, the youngsters. There's very, very few of those. There's some of them that are incredible and they can go on, but it's normally the guys that have been the silver medalists, because those are the guys that have had the little bits of trauma coming through.
Right.
They've had to fight their way through. They've been told either they're not good enough or they're too small or too thin, or... but they've had a fight, and then they're the ones that come through in the end. So that's what experience tells me.
That's so interesting.
Matthew, just going to stop there, Matthew, because Brendan's mentioned medals there, and as we know, you never won any medals at the Olympics.
But
three Commonwealth golds, mate.
Yeah, Robbie, listen, you're talking to the wrong man here, because we have a mutual friend.
I know.
Yes. Charters, and to be fair, in all my life growing up, without ever meeting Matthew, I felt I knew him through Peter, because Peter loved Matthew and always told me about how dedicated and how good he was.
Well, look, can I just put a bit of context? That's lovely to hear, Brendan. And Pete will be listening to this. And Pete, you know, for those who don't know who Peter Charters is, this is a primary school teacher on Silverdale Road in Reading. It's the road where my parents still live, where I grew up. And in addition to being a primary school teacher, he was also, you know, the passion for sport was unbelievable. Mm. Twinkle in his eye, whatever the sport. But he became interested in table tennis. I know this probably sounds slightly unconventional. And he started a club near Silverdale Road. And because of his inspiration, his thirst for learning, he just became a brilliant technical, tactical and psychological coach. And this one street in Reading had more top table tennis players than the whole of the rest of the UK combined. Mm. And then, after he had already changed the world of table tennis, you know, this guy is a legend, he went into football. And it was in football that he came across, he said it to me on the phone the other day. So I came across this guy who was moving from playing football, he had a terrible injury, had to move, decided to move into coaching. But this guy was everywhere. He was watching these matches in different, you know, Reading Schoolboys, I think, is Pete Charlton's team. And I'd see him at this match, then the next match. Then I'd go to Lillyshaw for coaching camps for aspiring coaches. And Brendan Rodgers would be there 3-4 times a year. He had this thirst for learning. Brendan, first of all, I think that's a great tribute to your mentality. Mm. What I would really like to understand, and if you bring Pete into this in any way, it'd be great too. Talk about that transition. You know, what were you seeking to discover about yourself, about football, about young players, about development as you moved on that journey?
I suppose a bit like the football one, Matthew. I wanted to be the best that I could be. And I knew, I also knew that I knew nothing. Because I was transitioning from wanting to become a coach. And I felt there were so many areas and facets of coaching that I knew nothing about. You know, I felt I knew the game. You know, I could demonstrate, I could make the passes, I could, you know, if I was coaching. But I always felt there was a lot more to it than that. There was the, you know, could I understand enough about medicine? Could I understand about sports science? Could I understand about psychology? Could I understand about communication? So I went on a journey and a path around all sorts of courses. You know, back then there was the National Coaching Foundation, and the National Coaching Foundation done courses on many aspects of coaching, like I say, communication, teaching, working with adults, welfare of children. And I just threw myself into it because I'm a learner. I've always been that way, wanting to learn, and I'm curious. So it excited me, but I knew I had to work in order to be the best I possibly could.
And at some point, Brendan, and Rob, this is fascinating. I think I'm right, by the way. Tell me if I'm wrong. But as you transitioned into coaching, you got a job at Reading, and then you hired Peter Charters to work alongside you. So you shared an office for a few months.
Yeah. Well, the thing that what I loved about Peter was unashamedly about elite.
Yeah.
And I wanted to be the best. And Peter was never about the guys who were, you know, of less. He was about quality. And he was about elitism. And he was unashamed about that. It was about top talents for him. And I found it curious. And I wouldn't say I was that. I was about development. But I shared a mindset with Peter, which is about, to be the best, this is what you've got to do, this is what you've got to be. And certainly his talent for identifying those elite players, like he did table tennis players, he had a great knack of that. And of course, he had lots of contacts. And for me, I was working as academy director. I would just be a sponge to him, because he was a wonderful teacher, not just in sport, but in life as well. I learned many traits from Peter, but a good man, but he was about elite, and that interested me.
No wonder I don't know the guy, then, if he wanted to know about elite.
I was about to say that. You were the one guy he swerved past whenever he thought about football.
I missed him.
But you know, it's a shame, Brendan and Rob, Roberto, because Pete, I wanted to bring him on as a surprise on this part, but he turned 80 last year, and he's in hospital. He had a stomach operation. So we're going to try and get him on a future pod, Rob, and he is a great, great guy. But then, going back to your story, Brendan, You've talked about that thirst for learning, wonderful, wonderful thing. Just talk about the chronology. You know, you start at Reading. How did you progress to become a first team manager in the Premier League?
Well, my journey was just, like I said, it was before sort of academies were born, and I went in and done my courses, and I was a centre of excellence coach working with 9s to 11s at the Reading Academy. And then as I was in there on a part-time basis, I was given an awareness that academies were coming and they might want full-time coaches. But I knew in order for me to get in, I needed to be qualified. So that was my journey, working from 9s to 11s. Then I progressed up through whilst doing my coaching badges. And then after a few years, the club became an academy. And initially, I was actually offered the job to be the head of the community, plus the under-9s to under-16s assistant academy director. Now, again, I suppose when I think back now, I turned the role down, even though I was desperate to be full-time in football, right? Because I knew where I wanted to go even back then. And 9 to 16s interested me, but the community scheme didn't. Because that was, and I'd done my time in the community scheme, because that's football for all. That was helping everyone. Yeah. I go back to my Peter Charters mentality. I was about trying to improve the best. And could I improve them? And I actually turned it down, because for me to make it worthwhile, because I was having to work at this stage as well. So for me to make it worthwhile, they would have had to put the two jobs together financially. So I actually turned it down, but within a year, I was offered the job, 9 to 16's assistant academy director on its own. So it wasn't so much money, but that wasn't the case. It was the case of being full-time in football. And then from there, I grew in the academy, became the academy director, overseeing the development. And then after about 10-odd years, I was 30, and I was offered the opportunity to go in 2004 to Chelsea. And I thought that was my next step then, because I'd been with Reading, which I loved. I'd been living in the town for so many years. But I felt now was my time to go into a club that at the time, Jose was just appointed in 2004. So now I'm going to work with an elite manager who's just won the European, you know, the European Cup or the Champions League. And I've now got an opportunity to work with some of the best young players in the world and a top-level manager. That then took me through. I had an amazing experience there working with Philippe Scolari, who'd won the World Cup, worked with Jose. Avram was there at the time as well. And then eventually I felt after 15 years as a youth coach and a reserve coach and a first-team coach that now was the time to go out on my own.
So with that elite mindset, you know, when you were with the 16s down to the 9s, how was your mindset on the weaker ones, developing them? Because we know development for all. But, you know, I try and develop players now, and there are stronger ones in the group, and sometimes you do focus on them a bit more, like in our grassroots team. If the top players are away thinking, oh, no, you know, they're away, the weaker ones, I say the weaker ones, maybe not so the developed ones, the technical ones, they might have to step in. And as a grassroots manager, you always want your best players available. So your mindset of wanting to be elite there when you had the 16 to 9-year-olds, how did you develop the weaker ones?
Yeah, for me, they were already elite because they were there.
Yeah, good point.
So
yeah.
It wasn't the case of, right, I've got two or three of the superstars in the group, which there always is, the gold medalists.
Yeah.
And the others, I'll just leave. I was never that way. My aspiration was for all the kids to be the best that they could be. How could I maximise their talent? And obviously, naturally, through the environment, ones are going to progress. But for the younger kids, it was always for me about giving them the aspiration that they can achieve.
Yeah.
And they can be better. And they would get no more or less from me than the top player.
Yeah.
And that was how I looked at it. They were elite for being there.
That's a great point. Yeah.
So could I then take them on the journey? I was never just specifically, right, the best player. Because the best player and some of the others, they'll get there in the end. And if I'm good at what I do, I'll help them get there quicker.
Yeah.
If I'm not so good, I'll hold them back. But
let me just ask. We ask, sorry to jump in there, Brendan, because it's a perfect time. Every guest, we ask three questions at different points in the podcast. Mm. And this is probably a good one for you, given what you were saying. What was the weakest part of your skill set and the one you had to work the hardest to improve as a coach?
I'm not taking a length of time here because I don't have any.
it's because
there's so many. there were so many. I think what I had to do initially, the respect was a huge factor for me, because I'd never been a player, you know, I'd never been to Robbie's level, I'd never been to the top level, so I didn't have that. So for me, I always felt that before anyone, and I learned this through my journey, that before anyone ever would listen to me as a coach, I had to earn the respect as a person, because I had no measure of what I was as a player to gauge, right, well, what type of football is he going to play? What type, you know? So I always felt that was something that people would say, you weren't a player, you're never going to get the chance. But I never seen it as that. My journey was just going to be longer. So I felt that the respect element was something that I had to earn very, very quickly. Because I didn't have that sort of background as a player. And I was happy with that. I have a huge admiration for guys that have played the game, and I love speaking with guys like Robbie, and you know. But my path was different. So initially, there was lots of things I had to improve, my communication and knowledge and understanding of coaching as a subject. But initially, I felt that I needed to earn the respect, and I would do that through the human side before I could then go on to the coaching.
That is fascinating, Brendan, because I feel like that now in punditry, because I played in the Premier League, but because people say you only won one trophy, and I still say at this minute in time I won more trophies than Harry Kane. But when I speak, if I'm sitting with a panel of people like a Rio Ferdinand who's won endless trophies, I'm always that I need to earn respect because I didn't play Champions League. I didn't play major tournaments. So I sometimes have an insecurity and have to try and earn the respect, because I think if I say that, I didn't win. But I did win because I played that many games in the Premier League. But you understand where I'm coming from? I'll know I'll never sit on a Champions League final panel because I never played at that level. But my opinion might be as valid, but because I didn't have that level of football, I'll never be on it.
Yeah, I always felt, Robbie, that what eventually comes through is, one, your knowledge, and two, your behaviour.
Yeah.
Those are two critical aspects in it. Like you say, the journey is a bit longer, and if you haven't done that, then listen, that's the way your careers went. But ultimately, you're paid there to give an opinion on the knowledge.
Yeah.
And obviously then your behaviour is how you showcase that. And I think then eventually, over the longer term, that will see you to have hopefully a really, really good career.
So, you know, sorry, Matthew, I'm just fascinated by the coaching aspect of it as well. As a young coach with, you know, an under 15 side, now, you know, going in at Macclesfield FC as, you know, head of football, helping Danny Whittaker, what advice would you give to me to try and get the best out of the young players? How do I inspire them? Do you understand what I mean? Like, I like to play. I like to listen. We could talk all day tactically. I like to play 4-2-3-1, because in my team I've got a lot of I've got pace out wide. I've got a centre forward who can bring people into play. I like to play through the lines. So, how do I get the best out of? What piece of advice would you give me to inspire players who, like yourself, maybe have been released from academy because they couldn't get around the park, you know? But I try and instill this mentality into them to say, listen, you can do it. What advice would you give me?
Well, I think, because I seen your interview the other day, and I was thinking for you when I seen you on talking about your the head of football operations and whatnot. So I'm thinking, right, so if I'm Robbie Savage going into that role, what do I need to do? Right, so I think you need to have a vision around all the teams. So what does football look like
at that level,
from nines through to 16s?
Yep.
And how does it, you know, what does it look like? So for the kids, technique, enjoyment, expression, that. And as they move then up, then they get into under 15s. I think it's having a football philosophy, not necessarily a system. So you don't get fixated on the system, because you can play football out of any system. It's the principles of how you play. So if you play in 4-2-3-1, 4-3-3, 3-4-3, 3-5-2, 3-1-4-3, it doesn't matter. You'll know what your brand of football can look like.
Yeah.
So I would hope that after over 30 years now as in football and 550-odd games, whatever, as a manager, that people would associate a Brendan Rodgers team, how they play. And I play lots of different systems because I like them to be tactically good out of different systems. But for the kids at that age, can they have a clarity on one or two different systems of play, but be clear on what your principles are?
So I like.
Just a quick one, because as somebody who's an outsider when it comes to football, I was struck by a quote from Steve Gerrard, you know, one of the greatest English players of all time. And he said that the training sessions that you conducted, Brendan, were on a different level to what he had experienced. I would love to know, what is it a coach can input into how players train in the build-up to matches, or perhaps even in the close season? What does that look like? What does good look like?
Well, I think stimulating players is important. You know, if you walk out, Robbie walks out onto the pitch every day, or any player, and they can see straight away whether the pitch layout, the organisation, has been thought about. If you walk out on a pitch and there's hardly anything down on the pitches, you know that maybe the coach hasn't really thought about this and we're just going to be doing the same thing. So for me, it was all about variety. It was always about preparing players for the game, but never forcing it, just drip feeding it in through the week, and then arriving to the weekend being clear in their role. But always enjoying the training. And I've always felt, and you guys will know, having been at the top level in your sports, that enjoyment for me also comes from working very hard.
Yeah.
It's not always about laughing and joking, and that is a part of it, of course. You need the fun element. I always talk about the fundamentals. You need to be strong in, and the first three letters of that is important. So you need to have fun. But fun, I've always been, the higher level you go, is about work and mentality and working hard. And so always the training sessions have a big intensity, a big tempo, a big rhythm to them, so that players feel they've physically and maximised all their qualities in that day. And then they come away and they'll come in the next day and do something totally different. All about their individual needs, but then how it always fits into the team.
It's fascinating. You know, going back to systems and philosophies, so I like my teams to play out from the back, yeah. And one of my centre halves, when the goalkeeper gets it, the centre half split, play it to him, look for the midfield players. And the other day we were playing a game and he kept getting the ball on the left hand side of the penalty area and trying to switch it, you know, switch it straight away to the full back who was pushed a bit higher. But there was their centre forward was blocking that passing line. So if he went low, he would get blocked in the dangerous area, then it'd be a one-on-one. So he'd done it twice, and it got cut out, and the centre-forward scored one and missed one. So at that level, you can bring a player off for 5 minutes and then put him back on. So I brought him off. So he said, "Why are you bringing me off for?" I said, "Well, listen, mate, I want you to play out." He said, "You want us to play out. That's what I'm doing." I said, "Yeah, but you've got to make your own decision on the football pitch of that pass wasn't on. Do you understand what I mean? So I just took him to one side, took him off and said, listen, just calm down, relax. Quite emotional. I said, you're fantastic, but I do want us to play out, but you've got to make your own decisions on the football pitch. Youngsters have to do that, don't they?
Yeah, yeah. So the thing I would say, what is that, you know, so I would ask the question, could you have kept them on and challenged them to see if he eventually found the right choice?
Yeah, yeah. I wanted to take him off for 5 minutes because his head had gone and he kept doing it. And I thought, right, 5 minutes to go for half-time. I take him off, I give him a breather, and then second half, he went back on. Then I challenged him, and second half, he was much better. He didn't do that, so he made the right choices.
Yeah, yeah. So it's that balance between exposing him and learning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He will feel exposed. He'll feel he was the...
So did I do, as a coach, you think I'd done wrong?
I don't say you'd done wrong. I say you could have done it better.
Yeah.
Because what you didn't do wrong because you actually want to help him.
Yeah.
The question will be is can you help him in a different way that doesn't expose him? You know as well as we all do, you don't want exposed as a player, never mind a child. You know? Because then the father says, he sat in the car and his father, his mom or his brother saying, what the hell, you know, blah, blah, blah. You do that again. Because see to get kids to play, you have to show them so much faith.
Yeah.
Because the easiest thing for any coach or manager, and this is what I experienced, is to get the team to kick it from one end of the pitch to the other. There's no pressure.
Yeah.
But what you're trying to give your kid there is that this is an opportunity. It's not a risk.
Yeah.
Yeah. And by giving them the courage to, okay, what other pass might be on? You're trying to hit the diagonal ball. Let's get cut out. We go for goal. That's okay. That's not the crime. But where else can we go? Now, he might find that in the game. And he finds a solution himself. And if he doesn't, that's the job of the coach.
Yeah.
So you didn't do wrong because you're trying to help the kid.
Could have done it better.
Could you have done it better is what you would probably ask. And if you go away in reflection, there'll probably be better ways rather than exposing them.
Yes. Can I ask a quick question on, that's really interesting. Brilliant. Rob, there you go, mate. You're learning. Getting a chance to talk to me and Brendan Rodgers. I mean, this is just one of the great afternoons of your life. Brendan, on the being influenced by other great coaches, I want to ask you a question, but there's a little double-edged sword there. I'm guessing, so obviously again, you guys know Mourinho, both of you well, very well known for tactical organisation, very rigorous thinker when it comes to formation. I'd love to know what you learned from Mourinho as one of the iconic modern coaches. But also, if you were mentoring Mourinho, what do you think his biggest weakness was as a manager or is?
No, Jose
another
was...
Another pause.
Hey?
Another pause.
No. Jose was... and still is a phenomenal coach. When I arrived at Chelsea in 2004, this is a guy that had a clear vision of how he wanted to work. He had this incredible charismatic way with players, with people. And I learned so much from his attention to detail. I think when he worked in Barcelona, he worked with a lot of coaches and a lot of people that were very based around the detail, and he was able to pick up from that. I picked that up from him. You know, I always was a hard worker. I'd always spend hours upon hours poring over stuff. What I got from Jose was how to formulate all of that in a very clear methodology. And just how he... Well, I was growing up, you're either a coach or a manager. And that's all I ever heard. Well, what do you want to be? Do you want to be a coach or a manager? And when I went into Jose, I seen a guy who was both. I seen a guy who was out on the field. He would be tactical, he'd be technical. He would test the players psychological. But he would also manage them. So I seen a guy who was a fusion between both. And that was how I'd always seen it. But I never, ever one had the maybe the role model, but two, I never really seen enough examples of that. But now all of a sudden I was a guy who I could see it right in front of my eyes. And he was hugely respectful, Josie. You know, for me, again, no big background. And maybe there was a rapport there because he never was the same. But he showed me a lot of respect in my role, gave me so much time. He was great on the human side. He just made you feel great. And the environment that he created, especially, you know, that first 3-odd years, it was a remarkable environment to be in, to be challenged, but also about, again, going back, it was elite. This was top level players every day, challenging each other, competitive, working hard, and winning. And I actually realised later on in my career, Matthew, that not everyone can be like that. Because when I first went into Watford as a manager, I brought with me this environment, this mentality into Watford to challenge players with. I was doing totally the wrong thing because they needed support.
Wow.
And I realised that sometimes it's only that very, very high level that have that real belief that you can really challenge, because they have that unswerving belief in their ability that they can rise to the challenge. Lots of other players, it's about the support, it's about the massage, it's giving them the instructions at the right moment, as well as challenging. But the very elite players, it's a different mindset.
It's fascinating because we're going from Jose Mourinho now back to grassroots and talking about parents. You know, you mentioned support. It's so important that the parents in this day and age support their children if they are to, you know, have a career in football. Because you've mentioned the parents sitting in the car. You know, maybe I exposed my centre-half at the weekend, and the parent who I know very well, you know, if he'd have got in the car and said, he took you off, why? I'm putting that, you know, I'm giving that youngster, his coach is having a go at him, but then his parents will have a go at Monday in the car. So how do you manage the expectations now in academies from parents where they think my son or, you know, our daughter is going to have a career in football?
Communication. It's communicating again the why you're there, why you're there to help them become better. And absolutely every father, every mother, every step parent, every guardian, they will always feel that their son or whatever is, or daughter is the very best, you know. But it's just, I think, it's always easy to tell the truth.
Yeah.
And that's always something I would say. And listen, I mean, you do that sometimes, people don't like it. But as long as you're honest, I always think you can tell anyone anything in the world. As long as you do it in the right way. You can give someone the worst news ever. But if you do it in the right way, it's okay. It's how you do it. So communication is absolutely vital. Managing expectation is absolutely critical with kids. And like I say, the boys that you're working with, they're great examples, because a lot of them are silver and bronze medalists. So they're going to need the support, the help, the encouragement, the challenge. But that's constant reinforcement. That's communication. And that's in your behaviour as well.
Can I ask a quick question about both Liverpool and Celtic? Mm. So two great clubs, iconic clubs that you managed. Do you remember, Brendan, I once went to a coaching course. It was at an academy ground of one of the clubs. And you were speaking directly before me, and you gave this presentation about Celtic and about what it meant as a club and what it meant to the community and how you try to create a strong bond, an even stronger bond between the players and the fans and its history. It's a wonderful thing to watch. Is that part of your philosophy, that you need to create, you know, there's a great book called Legacy, which is about the New Zealand rugby team, about creating a culture that connects the players to something bigger and more meaningful than just kicking a ball. Is that part of how you think about management as well?
Yeah, very much so, to the point where James is a close friend of mine, James Kerr, who wrote Legacy.
Yeah, right.
So
yeah.
I've had James actually works in with me here at Leicester.
No way.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I had him in at Liverpool. And yeah, my feeling is always, I suppose, again, goes back to my development roots. For me, it's always been about the top to the tail philosophy. So I, from the very top of the business to down with the kids, is this one vision. So I've always been about having just one club, one vision, and pouring everything into that and finding ways to connect everything together. And the stories of Liverpool is an incredible story. The club itself, worldwide, the status, the size of it. And of course, when I went in there after Kenny, it was always going to be something that was, it was going to be important. And hopefully by the time I left, we left a base there of good players, a connection, and it was an amazing time there. Celtic was different for me because I had that connection as a child coming through the history of the club. I understood the club. I knew where the support base was at. And I knew what I knew their feeling. I know the passion of Scotland with Celtic and Rangers. So that was something that was important to me. But it's something. And likewise, we're here. It's finding a cause. Yep. I always go into a club, find the cause that's going to pull everyone together, and then because ultimately it's about getting players to play for you, and how do you get them to play for you? It's connecting emotionally. That's ultimately right. What it is. You know, you can be as good as coach as you want, but if you cannot connect the emotion of it all, then it can be tough, Matthew. And that's what I always pride myself in doing, going into a club and looking to connect everyone and have this one vision for one club.
Obviously, when Brendan done that speech before you, I bet you were surprised when everybody had left when you come on.
There's like this mass exodus. It was like, I tell you what though, when you go and give a talk, and a person before, they were like on their feet going, yeah, yeah. And then the guy, you remember, what was it, Brendan? The elite player performance, the guy who came up with the elite player performance plan introduced me, and you could see the groan. Like, oh my God, who? Yeah. That guy wrote Bounce. But you know, Rob, think about it, mate, because a lot of corporations think about motivation in transactional terms. You know what I mean? You'll be motivated by getting a paycheck. You know, we're human beings. That isn't enough to recruit the what you were saying, Brendan, the deeper emotions and inspiration. And I think that is such a powerful part of what it means to create a powerful, enriching culture. I think it's difficult to do well, but I'm really fascinated, Brendan, that you... Rob, can you relate to that?
Yeah, I can, you know, but I'm just so fascinated, Brendan, about, you know, the mentality of youngsters. How you've brought so many young players through, I know it might be an easy question to answer. How do you know when they're ready, whether it's, you know, a youngster under 15, 16 level or to go into an academy, a youngster to go into the first team, a youngster to play in under 21? How do you know they're ready, or do you never know?
You don't know 100%, but I think for me, the age thing has never been a barrier. You know, whether that was Raheem at 17 and or whether it was like a young boy we put in here, Luke Thomas, towards the end of the season.
Done well.
Some of the other young players that I've played. I think with a young player, you never know until they put you in and how they respond to it. And so putting them into the environment, they'll either grow with it or they'll sink and they just need a bit more time. But I think when I study players a lot in training and look at them, I look at their temperament. Look at, you know, there's some players, Robbie, as you know, that... It wouldn't matter if they're playing in front of 50 or 500,000, they still have the temperament to play, you know. I've had others, you know, I've had young players, you know, that I've told them they're going on and I'm looking around 10 minutes later and they're not there. They're in the toilet and they've been in there for about 15 minutes. They don't really want to come on.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a bit... You know, there's obviously nerves and everything. But for me, I've always been one, just put them in. I think, it's, again, you'll see enough in them in training, personality, quality, temperament. Then just let them fly.
So what do you look for in a young player? Because the great story with me, Brendan, was Sir Alex Ferguson. When I was in the class 92, we had a trial at Littleton Road in Salford, and we played a game in the final week of the trial at Littleton Road, and my father was there, all the parents, the trialists were there. It was in the school holidays, and I had the worst game I've ever had at any level. I was so nervous, and Fergie was there, and I remember the scout coming off, Hugh Roberts, said to my dad, oh, you know, he wasn't his best game. My father went home, my mum was crying, and that was the end of the dream. And I know myself as a player, you know when you've played well. And I come off and I was heartbroken. I couldn't do anything. The phone went that night to my mum and dad's house. It was the scout. Fergie had rung him and said, listen, I've seen something in Robert, he called me, and we're going to give him a two-year scuba and a two-year YTS. So for me, I was surprised because I was thinking, what did he see? So what has he seen in me that made myself and the scout and everybody but the game, I was hopeless. What do you look for, and what are the characteristics you might see in somebody?
Well, sometimes there's the obvious, isn't it? The sheer quality of someone. But there's absolutely no doubt, I'm sure if you asked Fergie what he's seen that day, and it's the things that you look at, two of the biggest things, attitude and energy. And I bet you, without even seeing the game, I know that your attitude would have been unbelievable.
Yeah.
And your energy would have matched it as well. And even whenever your team has lost or lost heavily, it just shows you by having the right attitude and energy, you can still succeed.
That's a great thing for young players, isn't it? Now? Robert, sorry, we're going to speak all day.
I've got, okay, Brendan, second set piece question. what is the one thing you've got no talent in but wish you had?
Mine was football, Brendan.
Again, I'm trying to go through the numbers that I have in my head of things I'm not very good at. I'm impatient. I'm definitely impatient. Believe it or not, I'm a developer, and I can wait and I can put processes in place. But I think for my own self, I need things fairly quickly. You know, I like to see something, not even so much for other people, but I'm very, I'd be impatient in ways, especially if the standards have dropped or I need the levels to be high. So I'm impatient that way.
Mm. Let me ask a couple of quick questions, quick fire questions. By the way, before I do, I probably have never mentioned this to you, Rob, but my family has some Celtic heritage. My wife's great uncle, a great guy who I knew really, really well before he passed away, scored the winning goal in the 1967 European Cup final. Really? Brendan knows who this is. Roberto, do you know who this is?
That's Brendan.
Robbie would.
This is
1967 European Cup final.
Can't Celtic believe Chris played. Hasn't mentioned this to you, Mr. Sutton.
Wouldn't be Jimmy Johnston.
Good guess. That's a good guess. Stevie
Chalmers. Yeah.
Chalmers. Wow.
An incredible man. Who?
Wow.
Like I said, I was fortunate enough towards the end of his death. I seen him and came across him and. Yeah, now a true legend of the club and one of the great Lisbon Lions who've, like I say, they were pioneers of the British game. You know, the first British team to win the European Cup and set a trail really for every other of the great teams that we've had, like Liverpool and Manchester United.
If you had to pick one player, but I know this is an invidious question, but if you had to pick out one player as the outstanding player you have ever coached, who would you pick and why?
Yeah, I always think it's unfair to because whatever club I've always been at, you know, when I was at Reading or when I was at Swansea, what the guys at Swansea did for me in the 2 years we were together was phenomenal. You know, the working at Liverpool was an absolute privilege to work there with guys like Suarez, who was... Wow. Frightening and his mentality and talent, you know. I'm I wouldn't say, to be honest, Matthew. I've worked with so many brilliant guys, some fantastic players, like Scott Brown for me at Celtic as a captain. Such an underrated player. You know, someone who, like, if you're talking about a captain and how he leads a club, and actually, I was surprised by his quality, I have to say, when I went in there. This is a guy that could play for any of the top teams, mark my words, in England. And I had the chance to, but stayed at Celtic and dealt with all that pressure of what it is as a Celtic captain. Boys like Coutinho, natural, absolute natural ability. And I look here at Jamie Vardy, his story, but his mentality, the devilment in his game, but also the just the precision as a striker. So I can't say, you know, I would really have to think about that. I've been fortunate so far in my career. I've worked with some amazing players, and like I say, I think it's, for me, it would be unfair because all of them have given me so much.
That would have been an easy answer if I'd have played for you.
I think so, Robbie. I think that if you would have been in that centre midfield as a number 8 for me,
easy,
then you'd have given me, it just came straight to me.
Get out.
Rob, do you have any final questions before I get to the third set-piece question?
Yeah, just my last question will be the advice for any youngster. I think you've summed it up perfectly. Hard work, you've mentioned on numerous occasions. Energy, attitude. I think for all the young players listening, all the young people in grassroots sports, I think, you know, without putting words in your mouth, I think you've mentioned it several times. What is the piece of advice you would give to youngsters?
Work very hard. Be competitive and enjoy.
Yeah.
I think that if you, the Premier League still, for the greatest league in the world it is, you've got to go back to the basics of working hard and competitive. And if you do that in every single game you play in the Premier League, you have a great chance of winning it. You know, and I look at our example of Man City. We had a result that went around the world.
Yeah, magnificent.
And then a week later, we were just off it in terms of our work and our competitiveness, and we lose. But it's a great learning. It's a great learning. We've won 3 out of the first 4 games, played really well, but that was a great learning for our future. You've got to sustain it, and I'm sure the guys will learn. But for young players, you got to enjoy it. You got to have passion. You got to work hard, and listen is important.
So thank you, Brendan. Last question. This is the last of
this
the
set
piece.
This is the static
question.
Set piece position.
What was the best piece of advice anyone has ever given you, and who was it?
That's a good.
No, I think my father, obviously sadly passed away a number of years back, but he was always, but do your best. You know, and that is all you can do. And he was always realistic, bless him. He wanted me to be the best player in the world, but he always knew that I was never going to be. But in anything in life, you do your best, Brendan. And that's something that I look back on now as a 47-year-old and think, well, I've tried to honour that and do as well as I can in every aspect of my life, and certainly my professional life, where you're representing your mother and your father, that you work as hard as you can and do your very, very best. And if it's not enough, listen, that's okay. It's all right, but do your best. And that's something that I'll always take with me.
That's a wonderful way to end.
Brilliant.
Although, Rob, can you see, and thank you for being so open. Look, I think this has just been a fantastic insight into the way you think about football, the way you think about mentoring and inspiring people. Rob, I've enjoyed it massively. Yeah. So this has been great. Rob,
brilliant.
Joy to see you, mate. Lovely to see
amazing.
You. It's been a while. Brendan, hugely appreciate it. Thank you.
Amazing.
I'm going to pass on what you said to Peter Charters.
Please do.
I'm not sure if he's come out of hospital, but if he's still in there, he will love to hear what you had to say about it.
No, I'll definitely pass on my regards, Matthew. And at some point, I would love to speak to him because it's been a long, long time since I spoke with him.
Terrific stuff. I'm sure he'll be thrilled by that. And thank you, everyone, for listening. We'll be back next week with another guest. I can't promise they'll be as good as Brendan Rodgers, but we will do our very best. But for now, for me, from Brendan, from Roberto, a very goodbye.
Cheers, guys.